Welcome back to Banterbox, a review podcast run by the team here at Mad Artists. Each week, we will be reviewing a different production, whether it's a movie, TV show, whatever we're feeling like. And this week is our Christmas episode. We're actually recording this episode on Christmas Eve, and in honor of that, this week we watched Die Hard. My name is Danielle, and here are the other Mad Artists that I have with me to help break this down today.
Hey everyone, it's Samuel.
Hey, it's Russell.
Hey, it's John.
And it's me, Tyler.
So before we go any further, as of this episode's recording, we have been podcasting for a whole year. Our actual anniversary was yesterday, but close enough. So we've got some stats and some little things that I've given out for everyone to bring to the table. So first off, I would like to just kind of go around and everyone say what your favorite episode that you were on for was and why, you know, nice and succinct. And if there were any that you weren't on for that you would have liked to have been.
So my favorite that I was on for was just an absolute wild ride. It was probably the biggest shift. I think it's the only movie, one of the only movies we've given 10 out of 10. And also one of the only, I think the only movie we've given 0 out of 10. Singing in the Rain and Dr. Doodle-ill. That whole experience was a trip from watching the movies to recording the podcast. It was night and day difference, and yeah, it was very fun. And I think the only one that I haven't been on is 28 Days Later.
And Cool as Ice.
Well, I was on for most of Cool as Ice.
Yeah, you were in the room.
Yeah. Well, no, and I was actually on the podcast.
He did give it a 10 out of 10.
Yeah, but he couldn't hear what we were saying.
That's correct. Because you cut it off halfway through. So I was in the first half of the
podcast. Okay. All right, who's next?
My favorite episode that I was a part of has to be Troll 2. That movie was so much fun and was so memeable. And then on top of that, just to add to the meme energy, John watched the wrong movie and still came to the podcast and sat down and was just like, I forgot how weird the Trolls movies were. And we all just looked at him cross-eyed like, what? That was the best one. But like with the popcorn, oh my gosh. Just, I mean, incredible. Watch Troll 2.
Or Crash Course of Troll 2.
All right. Whoever wants to go next?
Oh, you go ahead, Tyler.
All right. So I got to be honest, it was a toss up for me between The Truman Show and Tombstone. But I gotta say it's Truman Show, specifically because it exposed me to what is now like probably one of my top 10 favorite movies of all time. Like, it was such a trip. It was such a treat watching that movie. And just the talk back was like really introspective. We had like really good conversation. We had like that manic energy, which kind of like that similar manic energy that we had like in the Coolest Ice one, which holds a very special place in my heart. But it was like a pretty good balance between manic and crazy and also like really introspective. So that was the most well-rounded one that I've been on. And I love it a lot. And the one that I'm sad that I missed, because I had to miss a lot of them, It is a perfectly split tie, because these are two of my favorite movies, period, and that is Spirited Away and Scott Pilgrim. Mm. I freaking adore those movies, and they probably are both top 10 movies for me, and they're just, whew, I love them. I would have had a lot to say about them, and I think it's cool that you guys did Spirited
Away. Those
were
both early days.
Those were very early episodes, mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I forgot to say which one I wanted to be a part of completely, because I was just so focused on Troll 2. But
as you should be.
The one that I wish I had been a part of, and you know, Tyler just said it, so I hate to say it again, but Spirited Away is such a like fever dream of a movie. Mm-hmm. And like, I have considered writing college papers on that movie and like going into like deep dives of like analyzing like what it's about and what's going on and the themes, because it's all like just like under the surface, but like any deep look and you're just like, this is so crazy, I don't understand. It's the best.
Yes, very much so.
I would have loved to be a part of that one so bad.
Mm-hmm. I think my favorite one that I've been on has been probably The Prestige, because it was just such an engaging, as a film, it was just super engaging, and it was very interesting to get all the feed.
John, what? Was it the most rewatchable?
The most rewatchable
movies
that we've done?
Sure, it had fantastic rewatchability. But no, it was fun. It was a fun movie. It was that or Secondhand Lions, just because
that was a good one.
That was a delightful Michael Caine film that I've never seen before.
That one holds a special place in my heart.
Yeah, for sure.
Plus, Travis Willingham got punched by Robert Duvall.
Which is fantastic.
That was that movie. Yeah.
That was that movie.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Well, my favorites, two of them have already been said. Sam said one of mine, and then you said one of mine. Troll 2 and The Golden Age were just so, like, crackhead energy, and I loved it. And the other one that had that same energy and was so much fun had to be the Riverdale musical episode.
Yes.
The one that we did, where we went through the Carrie episode, the Heathers episode, and the Hedwig episode. And I, listening back to it, like, you know, getting all my stats for this, I just, I missed it. I missed it. It was great. And it was one of my favorites. And I was on for all of them. So I don't have any I missed out on. But yeah, they're
almost like it's her podcast. I run the show.
Oh, okay. So I did go through, this was grueling. And I'm going to start making this easier on myself for next year. But I have everybody's, like, guessing stats from every episode they've been on.
Oh, wow.
So I want you to just take a guess. Who had the most correct, or, you know, they were the closest to the Rotten Tomatoes critical score? Who had the most?
Samuel.
Okay, you're right. Now, what about audience?
John.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say John, too.
I was going to say John, or I was also thinking myself.
So I think Russell's been pretty close.
But Russell, I just don't know that he's been on.
Well, here's the thing. I'm mostly kind of going out of my two boys here because
just because we've been
y'all
on
have
so
been on
many
for so long that, like, no one else has matched up yet.
Just to be the outlier, I'm going to say Samuel.
It was John.
It was definitely also Samuel. And IMDb score.
Also going to say Samuel.
I'm holding out for John. I need him to get a win.
I'm going to say Samuel because it seems to be the majority.
Sam, you're, like, too good at this game. Yes, all three. Sam was the highest on all of them.
That's just because he reads all the stats and then changes them by a percentage.
He wins only because he cheats.
You got me.
Have everybody's stuff here. Sam, you were the closest on 22 different IMDb scores. We've done 40 episodes. You got the exact IMDb score on A League of Their Own, Jump In, and Tombstone. You got closest to the audience 18 times. Your exact audience guesses were The Last Samurai and Just Friends. And then you guessed the critical score 24 times. And your exact critical score was Total Recall. And the times that you hit what I called a home run, which is where you got the closest on all three, you got a lot. You got Scott Pilgrim, Jump In, Sky High, La La Land, and A Quiet Place. There you got all three of them in the same episode. And your 10 out of 10 ratings for this year were The Prestige, Singing in the Rain, and The Truman Show.
I forgot I gave Prestige to them.
Yeah.
But John, I'm the funniest.
John, you got 16 IMDb's right. Your exact IMDb guess was Green Street Hooligans, actually. Nice. You got 14 audiences. Really. Your exact audience guesses were Secondhand Lions, The Florida Project, and The Truman Show.
No.
You got 9 critical things the closest, and your exact critical guesses were Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, Little Shop, and Bad Times at the El Royale. And the time where you hit your home run was on I Am Mother, actually. You got all three on that episode, and your top 10 was everybody else's top 10s, which were Singing in the Rain and The Truman Show. Mine were Singing in the Rain, Truman Show, I Am Mother, and Chicago were my 10 out of 10s. Russell, your inaugural episode, I'm trying to include that as well, was the Golden Age musicals, which was a baller one to come in on.
I remember well.
You guessed the IMDb twice, audience twice, and crit twice, so you're pretty consistent so far.
We all have a close relationship because we sat through Doctor
Doolittle
together.
We sat through Doctor Doolittle together.
It bonded us in a way.
It is the worst movie we've ever seen by far.
I think we all gave it like a 1 or a 0.
The highest anyone gave it was 1 parrot out of 10. That was the highest. The scores were 0.5 and 1. No one went higher than 1.
It was so bad.
And I think
you
gave it the 1 because you were like, I gotta respect the effort at least. And that was like
your
reasoning.
So much animal training in that movie.
There was a
lot. And this is the Robert Downey Jr. one?
No.
This is the 1960s
OG.
One.
Jesus, okay. Sorry, I don't know.
This is the one with Rex Harrison in the
movie?
60s.
Yeah, this is the Rex Harrison.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And your 10 out of 10s were the same as everyone else's Singing in the Rain, Truman Show, and The Last Samurai, obviously.
Oh my gosh, that movie
Samory and Brett aren't here, but Samory got the audience score once and the critical score 3 times, and she guessed the critical score exactly on the Dungeons & Dragons movie. And that both was. Of their first episodes was Dungeons & Dragons. And then Brett guessed the audience 1 time and got the exact audience score for Robin Hood. And Tyler, your inaugural episode was 28 Days Later.
Mm-hmm.
You got the IMDb twice, the exact IMDb on 28 Days Later. Audience 5 times with the exact audience also on 28 Days Later.
I know my people.
You guessed the critical once, and then your only 10 out of 10 so far that I'm counting not for the meme is The Truman Show. I haven't included Cole's
eyes. So I'd like to point out that Tyler, every time he guesses and you say that he won, he's like, that's my first win ever. When he won on the very first episode he came on.
No, he was listening to me gathering the stats last night. Really? And like 3 episodes deep, you've been on 3 episodes, you were like, that's the first time I've won. And Sam goes, is that correct? And I went, no, I have the stats. He's just lying. Like, he's won several times.
It's not that it's lying. I have short-term memory loss. I'm sorry.
He's just a liar.
And the last thing that I have is that the pickiest reviewer on the podcast by far so far is Samuel, and I am the least picky.
Really?
Yes. You rated, because I counted everybody's, how many movies or things that we reviewed that you rated over 7 out of 10, because that's like the passing grade, you know? Sam rated 27 over 7, John rated 29 over 7, and I rated 33. Over 7. So I'm definitely the least picky.
I'm middle ground, apparently.
Yes, you are middle ground, my friend. Now I want to see what you guys think fit into our like top 5 places, but there are 7 episodes there for the most listens out of our 40 episodes so far. And then I'll see who gets close.
I think in the 5th place, let's go, can we go place by place?
Yeah.
I think in the 5th place is Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Okay.
I have absolutely no frame of reference on any of these.
Neither do I.
A lot of it is arbitrary.
It's okay.
I was going to say.
Trolls 2.
Troll 2?
Not Trolls 2. That's what two. You see?
That was the same mistake that John
I would have been like, hey, John, you want to watch this stupid Trolls movie?
So we have one for Troll 2 in 5th. We have one for, what was yours again?
Scott Pilgrim
in 5th.
I think in 5th. There's a really, really, really good chance that it was one of the Coral ones, but I feel like those might be a little higher. So I'm going to say the SpongeBob SquarePants movie.
The SpongeBob movie, okay.
I almost had that for number 5.
Those are an oddball. I know it's recent, but I'm going to say Tombstone.
Okay, no one got the 5th place one. The 5th place most listened to episode is Bad Times at the El Royale, believe it or not.
Okay.
So in 4th place, we have 2 different episodes tied for this one.
Okay.
I have A Quiet Place and Spaceballs.
Okay.
I have Tombstone and The Last Samurai.
Okay.
I'm going to throw in there The Prestige, and I'm going to throw in Spirited Away.
Okay.
I'm going to say Green Street Hooligans and Big Fish.
You are the only one who got even one. Tombstone was one of them.
Okay.
In 4th place. Okay. The other one, a very similar movie. Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, no.
It's tied for the really? First place.
Guys, that's my first win ever.
Those movies could not be more different.
They could not be more different.
Tombstone that's and the insane. D&D movie?
So, in 3rd place, there's just one.
Hobbs and Shaw.
Okay.
The Truman Show.
Okay.
I'm going to say Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Okay.
The Prestige.
No one got it. 3rd place is Black Swan. Believe it or not.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Okay.
Really
all
right, 2nd place is just one.
Big Fish.
Okay.
La La Land and Aladdin. Oh, it's just one? Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I mean, that was an episode. Yeah, that's one episode.
Oh, yeah, the La La Land and Aladdin. Yeah. Okay, I was like, okay.
Yeah.
2nd place, this is a big one. I'm going to say A Chorus Line and Little Shop for this one.
Okay.
Heathers.
Nope, no one got it. 2nd place, get ready for it, boys, is Robin Hood.
Get out
that's
of here.
That's our second most. No that is in the second place.
A recent
most.
That's a very recent one.
And in first place, we have 2.
Yeah. All right. Tied. So, tied. I have reasons for this.
Okay.
One of them because I feel like it's a movie that I don't know how accurate this is. This is kind of a wild guess. It's a movie that I see people reacting and reviewing to on YouTube all the time, so I feel like it's a popular movie for people to listen to the reviews of. And one because I know that I personally listened to it twice and I feel like a lot of us might have. Which might have racked up the views a little bit and kind of swayed it. So I have The Last Samurai and Cool as Ice.
Okay, two very different movies.
But I also think my ghost pick is Singing in the Rain and Dr. Dolittle.
Okay.
My thought process behind this is the first is just an objectively beautiful and incredible movie, and the second one is the first one ever. So I think it's Spirited Away / Mad Max Fury Road.
Okay.
That if someone's like going through and they're like, oh, I want to start from the beginning so that they all go to Mad Max Fury Road, maybe?
Okay.
I think that The Last Samurai has got to be on there, and I also think that The Adventures of Sharkboy and Lava Girl is on there. Because people love that movie.
You're correct. It's great, but like, what?
Okay, John?
So, I'm going to say Golden Age Musicals, which was Doolittle and Singing in the Rain.
Yep.
Because I feel like Singing in the Rain is a part of it. You're going to have a large attraction to it.
Okay.
And I am, I'm going to be a little funky. I'm going to say I Am Mother.
Okay. Again. The only person who got one is Tyler. Mad Max is tied for first.
Really? Yay.
And the other one, A Quiet Place.
Get out of here. Interesting.
Interesting.
And we apparently have listeners in the U.S. and in Germany, question mark? Because when I looked at the stats, most of it's from the U.S. with like 1% from Germany, so.
Oh, that's my German friend.
But yeah, those are our top 7 episodes in the, I guess, top 5 places.
Nice.
Of weird hodgepodge of things. Yes. But yeah, I just wanted to say thank you to all of our listeners and to all my fellow mad artists for making me excited to do this every week, give or take. And I can't wait to see what this next year has in store for us. We're going to be starting off 22 with a banger of a series.
Yeah, can we go ahead and announce? So all right, can we say what our next movie and then what our next series is?
Absolutely. All right, hold on. Russell, say the movie, yeah, and then you say, yeah, the series.
The next movie was one of my picks, and that's Pan's Labyrinth.
Yes.
So get excited. That movie is ridiculous.
I heard that movie is nuts.
And then starting the second week of January, I've never been more excited for a series than what we're going to do on here. We're going to go through every Star Wars movie, baby. Rewatch them all. Review them all. Y'all are going to be getting lore dumps. I will never have talked on this podcast as much for the Star Wars movies. Get ready. Get hyped.
Yes, we won't be doing it every week because I know that's a little exhausting. We'll be switching it off, you know, Star Wars 1 week and then like
we did with the musicals.
Yeah, well, not quite as spread out as the musicals. Musicals we did once a month. Yeah. And I don't want to be doing this for 2 years. So we're going to do it like every other week. We're going through Samuel's personal little order.
I don't know if it's going to work that well, but so there's a watch order online called the Machete Order. I kind of reworked it a little bit in a way that I think is going to work a little better because that completely cuts out episode 1, which I think is bull. So I kind of reworked it a little bit, and it's going to be an interesting experience.
Yes.
It's going to be an interesting experience.
For sure. And we're all really excited about it, so stick with us as we go into our second year, and thanks again for all the support. So now, let's dive into Die Hard here. Who had seen this before?
Oh, well, a million times. Yeah.
I've seen bits and pieces, but I've never seen all the way through.
So Tyler, you're the only one who's seen it all the way through, like,
multiple times. This is one of my, like, pocket pick movies.
What was your, like, I guess, exposure to it?
I think my dad showed this to me when I was probably too young to watch it.
It is rated R.
So. It is rated R. It was, I think, if not the first, I think it was one of the first rated R movies that I've seen, so I probably saw it when I was, like, 11 or 12, but it's just, it was so exciting when I watched it the first time, and then there was a gap of time, maybe like 3 or 4 years before I saw it last, so rewatching it was really good. It's just I adore this movie, so I've got some stuff to talk about.
Oh boy,
here's the thing, I'm kind of surprised I haven't seen this movie yet. Like it's one of those movies I've been meaning to watch it for years.
My dad has said for years, he's like, I gotta show you guys Die Hard, I gotta sit you down and we're all gonna watch Die Hard. And it's just never happened. Yeah. You know, I've even, like, had friends and other people come through my life that were like, you've never seen Die Hard? We gotta make this happen.
Well, and I told Danielle, one of my favorite action movies of all time is Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
Which I feel like is in a very similar vein.
It's a very spiritual
tie
through whatever.
Yeah, it's just maybe a little more dramatic. But yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I watched this while at work at Domino's yesterday. I watched this sporadically with my headphones on while folding Domino's pizza
boxes. Garrett, if you're listening, she didn't do that.
Garrett wasn't there. It was Devin. Devin doesn't care. Yeah, so I saw like, it kind of watches. Sporadically. There's a chance I missed a few small things just because I was at work, but I didn't have any other time. But in spite of all that, I still ended up enjoying it a lot, so...
I watched it while wrapping Christmas presents.
Honestly, the perfect backdrop to this. I'm also shocked I hadn't seen this one, because I love... One of my favorite all-time, like, Christmas movies is Gremlins, and it's not similar to this, but it is, like, similar in the vein of, like, I guess what you would call a non-traditional Christmas movie. And so now that I have another one, I'm excited to throw that into my Christmas queue as well.
And Lethal Weapon is the same, so
Be
ready, be prepared.
I didn't know it was also a Christmas movie.
And fun little sidebar, despite the amount of times that I've seen this, I was like, okay, I'm going to rewatch this movie just to be refreshed on the story beat so that I can come prepared.
Yeah.
but, because, you know, I'm you know, I got the house all to myself. It's late at night last night. I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to pop on Skyrim. Play some mindless Skyrim while I'm kind of referencing and looking at the movie. And I'm not even kidding, despite the fact that I'm sitting in my living room with my TV there, I just sat down and watched the entire thing on my laptop because I was so invested in the movie. I'm like, God, I missed this.
Well, this one came out in 1988. It was directed by John McTiernan and written by Jeb Stuart and Stephen E., I'm going to butcher it, D'Souza. And it's actually based on the novel Nothing Lasts Forever by Roderick Thorpe. And it stars Bruce Willis as John McClane and Alan Rickman, ya boy, rest in peace, as Hans Gruber. You can watch this for free on Peacock or on Prime Video or with a Sling TV subscription, or you can buy or rent it on Vudu, Apple TV, or Google Play. And the IMDb summary for this says, an NYPD officer tries to save his wife and several others taken hostage by German terrorists during a Christmas party at the Nakatomi Plaza in Los Angeles. Samuel.
So our director, John McTiernan, hasn't done a lot of movies, but a lot of his movies, of the ones that he has done, have been pretty big. One of John's favorite movies ever he directed, Predator, the very first Predator. He directed Hunt for Red October.
He cooked up so much of
that. He directed The Last Action Hero and Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Oh, no kidding.
So that is his career. I believe he's retired now. He's a little bit older. Our writers, neither of them have done a lot. Jeb Stuart wrote Lock Up, Vital Signs, The Fugitive, which is a very good movie with Harrison Ford and Tommy Lee Jones, and Switchback. The Fugitive is the only one of those I'd ever heard of.
Yeah.
And then Stephen E. D'Souza wrote 48 Hours, Commando, The Running Man, Judge Dredd, the early 2000s one with, I don't remember, and the Angelina Jolie Lara Croft.
I have heard of none of that, but good for him.
Listen to Lara Croft.
Well, does anyone have any overarching thoughts before I jump into this plot here?
It was just fun. It was just so much fun.
It was a lot of fun. It was able to keep me occupied and not bored while at a very boring show.
And I had no idea Alan Rickman was in this, so I was sitting there wrapping presents. Oh, and I heard the voice in my head snapped up. I was like, wait a second. Snape?
No, I knew he was in it because I had seen clips from Die Hard before, and so I was like, oh my gosh, Alan Rickman is in this. Like, and so as soon as I started, I was like, where's he, boy? When's he popping up?
Mr. McClane.
Well, I'll go ahead and dive in here. So on Christmas Eve, New York City Police Department Detective John McClane arrives in Los Angeles, hoping to reconcile with his estranged wife, Holly, at a party held by her employer, the Nakatomi Corporation. He is driven to Nakatomi Plaza by my favorite character, a limo driver, Argyle, who offers to wait for McClane in the garage. He did nothing but make me laugh. He's in there, like, laughing, being like, so what happened, man? Why aren't y'all together anymore? Full on smiling. It very much reminded me, I don't know why, and this isn't how you treat people, but it reminded me of you, Tyler. Just with the energy he had, just his vibe reminded me of you, and, like, his whole just bopping around, like, so where are we going? Off to see your wife? That's awesome. Oh, y'all aren't together?
Are you
what
divorced?
Happened?
Like, are we divorced? Getting some girls back? What's going on?
It was so funny, and I loved him.
Using the stuffed bear as a metaphor?
He was absolutely my favorite character.
I'll take it.
But so while McClane changes clothes, the tower is seized by German radical Hans Gruber and his heavily armed team, including Carl and Theo. Everyone in the tower is taken hostage except for McClane, who slips away. One thing I want to ask, you might know the answer to this. She started to say something, and I guess it was about like Japanese culture, what she was explaining why she had her maiden name instead of her married name. And because he was like, oh, well, you didn't want to take my name or you didn't want to keep my name. And she was like, it's a Japanese corporation. They expect married women. And then he cut her off. And I was like, wait, I want to hear the rest of that. And I forgot to look it up. Do you know the answer to that?
I'm almost positive that it means like in Japanese culture, like married women should be in a should be more. Again, this is speculation, should be more in like the homestead setting.
That's kind of
as opposed to her role, which was high up in the corporate ladder, mm-hmm. which also stems back to the conflict that started the movie between John McClane and his wife, because mm-hmm. they reference this and kind of give you little breadcrumbs throughout the movie. But the whole thing that separated them in the first place was the fact that he's a New York cop. She gets an opportunity for something big out in Los Angeles. She mm-hmm. takes it, and he's not supportive of her because he doesn't think that she's going to make it.
Yeah.
Because John McClane's a little misogynist.
Oh, trust me. In their whole argument in the bathroom, I was like, he is absolutely in the wrong on this. Like, he's just being a jerk. And she was, like, ready to make up and, like, be
right.
fine.
And right, because she misses
started
her.
Started the whole fight again. And I was just like, this is so, like, dude.
And that's why it's really cool, because it's not one of those, like, cheesy, like, subplot romance nonsense mm-hmm. that kind of just, it's like, shut up, just get to the action. Because mm-hmm. his arc is realizing, like, as he's in this life-threatening situation where his wife and his own life could be on the line.
Yeah.
Like, wow, I really am a jerk, and I'm really in the wrong here, and my wife's pretty incredible, and I should show her that love and respect. Like,
yeah.
like through the movie, he's, like, coming to terms with just being able to admit that.
Yeah.
Which is really cool, because I like that. That's more engaging of a subplot than a lot of the romantic subplots that you'll see with action movies like this, which is cool. But yeah, that was what it was, is that I think if she took her maiden name as opposed to her married name, then she would have the appearance of, like, a strong, independent woman who's not mm-hmm. beholden to a man. Again,
that's
speculation.
Which, granted, they all knew that she had a husband, though. I think it was more about just, like, I guess the cultural aspect, maybe? Because when he showed up, her boss was like, yeah, I know who you are. Come on back. Like, mm-hmm. like he knew her. And so I was like, is this more about the lower company people? Or, like, I don't know.
The parent company is held. The parent company of the corporation is based out of Japan.
Yeah.
So I think because they do dealings with their parent company, that mm-hmm. maybe that
it was
might
more
have something
about
to do
the parent
with it
company.
Because she's in a high director position.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, but I think that starts getting into the weeds a little bit.
Yeah. I was just curious if you knew, because
sure,
that was interesting
sure.
to me. But yeah, so Gruber is posing as a terrorist to steal the $640 million in untraceable bearer bonds in the building's vault. He murders executive Joseph Takagi after failing to extract the access code from him, and tasks Theo with breaking into the vault, which, I mean, I definitely saw the murder coming. I guess I hadn't totally fully realized it was a rated R movie until there was so much blood splattered on the window. And I was like,
yeah.
Oh, this is a rated R movie. Okay. It took me a second to fully realize what I was getting into. But the terrorists are alerted to McClane's presence, and one of them, Tony, is sent after him. McClane kills Tony and takes his weapon and radio, which he uses to contact the skeptical LA Police Department. That... I can't get over
very, very
that police department being
yeah.
like, I'm sorry.
So incompetent.
Being like, so this channel is only for emergencies. And he's like, am I ordering a pizza?
That was my favorite line.
I'm telling y'all, there are terrorists in this building and people
Does
are
it sound
dying.
Like I'm ordering a pizza?
And they're just like, and then a gunshot goes off with him still holding down the thing. And she just goes like, ow, you know what? I
that was
send
a loud
a car.
Noise.
She was just like, ow. And then it's just like, fine, send a car over there just to, like, look. And I'm like, yo, what cops are these? Like,
and then the head of the LAPD is just as bad as the chick over the phone.
It was so terrible. I was like, oh, my God. But then it brings in my other favorite character, Sergeant Al Powell. Hmm? He's sent in to investigate. Meanwhile, McClane kills more terrorists and recovers their bag of C4 and detonators. Having found nothing amiss, Powell is about to leave. Until, which the guys, I don't remember all of the, like, German guys' names. I really just know Carl and Hans, and that's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm.
Whichever guy was the one that was so chill playing it off so well when Powell comes in at the first time, and he's just like,
the front, who took the front desk?
Yeah, the front desk guy.
Yeah.
He's just like, hey, dude, what's up? Okay, you know, yeah, have a look around. He's just like watching the game, and I was like, you are playing this off like a master.
He put it like, and it was cool too because he was a European. He's a European terrorist, and he's over here with a Southern accent. Watching the game, like Romario, yeah, man, look around, do your thing. Meanwhile, one of the other terrorists is waiting with the gun to jump him if he comes back, and he's like, you know what, I'm not doing it. And he's like, all right, that's your life that you just spared. See ya. All right, get the machine gun.
Like, dude, that guy was so chill. I was like, this guy needs an Oscar. He's so good.
Yeah.
To just be that relaxed in that situation. Holy crap. But yeah, so he finds nothing amiss. He's about to leave until McClane drops a terrorist corpse onto his car.
It worked.
It worked. Yep.
Talk about giving Powell's a man a midlife crisis.
Yeah, man, I'm headed out. Here's a body on your car. Oh my gosh, that was so funny. I lost it a little bit.
One of the coolest things about the movie for me is not even so much the action as much as Bruce Willis's reactions to everything that's happening. Like, I, as silly as it sounds, I wholeheartedly believe that these are the reactions of a hardened New York cop who's just getting screwed every which way but up and is just doing his best. Because, like, you see genuine fear and shock at some of the stuff that he's doing. Like, this is way, way above his pay grade, and he's constantly grappling with the facts, like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Mm-hmm. Like, even when he's talking to himself, he's like, what are you doing, John? Why are you doing this? As he's tying the thing to his belt where he can jump, like, off of the side of the building.
Something that I saw in the trivia that I didn't write down was that Bruce Willis, he actually, like, I don't know if he spoke with him or if he just watched a bunch of videos of like police officers, and specifically like New York police officers who have been through like these kinds of situations, because he wanted to be able to like portray it accurately. And he because one thing that a lot of people were like, oh, you know, in action movies they always make like too many jokes and they're in a stressful situation, and Bruce Willis was like, that's kind of what they do though, like, that's how they cope, is they are constantly like making jokes about the situation because they're like, if I'm making light of it, then maybe I won't die in 5 minutes, like, you know. And I will say one of my favorite moments that was just very funny to me. He's just like, it's towards the beginning of everything happening, and he slips away, and you see him go into a room, and there's just like porn on the wall, and he just walks up and just goes, ladies, and just walks past. I just thought it was so funny. I was like, that's just such a random thing to throw in there, but it cracked me up.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that I thought was really cool that he was like, no, that's actually like what they do.
And it's legit. I mean, I haven't been in a gunfight, but like of the high stakes, like almost dangerous, like situations that you just have in living life, like I absolutely will talk a bunch of smack to try and let the air out a little bit.
Yeah.
Even if I'm just by myself, and if I think I'm alone and someone's listening to me, I sound like I'm insane. But
you sound like John.
But yeah, no, I don't think it's ridiculous at all. I think it's very legit. And but there's a difference between looking at the camera and having that laugh line. Mm-hmm. And I think he really sold.
Yeah,
I'm just trying to make heads or tails of this situation.
I mean, this is also famously his favorite role he's ever played.
Yeah.
And you could tell like he really, really loved this. Yeah. But so the corpse drops on his car. After Powell calls for backup, a SWAT team attempts to storm the building, but is assaulted by the terrorists.
Just miserable.
At
which Powell's just sitting there communicating with McClane, like, yeah, they don't know what they're doing, man. It's all going wrong.
I also love that Powell calls out everything they're doing wrong right before it happens. Yeah. It's like, they're just blindly shooting. They can't hit anybody. And he's like, they're aiming for the lights. And it's like, oh no, the lights!
Like, they're taking out the lights! And he's like, y'all, Powell is the smartest one here. Yeah. Y'all need to listen to him. So McClane throws.
Which I also like that ended up being the case, because it felt like they were setting up him up to be the doofus cop. So I liked the
switch. Yeah, that he was actually like really smart. Yeah. So McClane throws some C4 down an elevator shaft, causing an explosion that kills some of the terrorists and ends the assault. Holly's coworker, Harry Ellis, attempts to negotiate on Gruber's behalf, but when McClane refuses to surrender, Gruber kills him. Which McClane gave him every opportunity.
Yeah,
he was like, dude, they're gonna kill you. Like, I don't know this guy. They're gonna kill you right now. And he was just like the whole time, no, they're not. Pop, like,
Hans, Booby, I'm your white knight.
You know, that was a ad-libbed line when he walked in. So, Alan Rickman's, like, look of just, what? Like, his was absolutely genuine.
His reactions made that scene. I mean, because he's, you figured that out all by yourself.
It was so sarcastic, and I loved it. Gosh.
I loved when McClane called it on the radio, like, and he was just like, Hans, listen, I know what kind of man you are. I do not know this guy. Like, just let him go. Like he doesn't understand what's going on. And he was like, Ellis, stop being an idiot.
And then, nope, you're dead anyway, because you're stupid.
I was like, oh, well, okay.
Poor okay, Powell cool. has to come from immediately after, like, dude, you did what you could.
Yeah, Powell's, like, trying to make him feel better, and he's like, no, like, that sucked. Like, he was a douche, but that didn't mean I wanted him to die.
Well, he had a similar reaction when, in the very beginning, when they killed Mr. Takagi. Because they go out and they kill Mr. Takagi.
That
and,
freaked him out. That wrecked
him. Yeah, and he was running around like on a floor above just going like, why didn't you stop him, John? Because you'd be dead too, John. And he's like trying to reckon with... Like, that's why this movie is so good to me, because it's not 80s pulp action film where it's just like run and gun, machine gun, everybody's dying left and right. Each kill is very meaningful, and the bad guys react to the deaths, and John McClane reacts to the deaths, and it's like it feels like real life in the sense that
the reactions to death are genuine.
Yeah, these are real people reacting to someone getting shot and dying, and it's just great. Like,
it's not like Clint Eastwood blowing a guy's brains out and be like, "That's what you get."
Yeah, it's genuine reactions. The scenery, right.
Well, while checking the explosives on the roof, Gruber encounters McClane. This was my favorite part. Encounters McClane and pretends to be an escaped hostage.
Mm-hmm.
Which his switch into that accent, when he just switched into it, I was like, nice. Like, nice.
Oh, man.
He pretends to be a hostage. McClane gives Gruber a gun.
And I liked that you could see for a split second the genuine, like, terror on Gruber's face. In that moment of
crap.
But then he's like, no, he has to see my face.
Yeah.
Let me just change my voice enough that maybe it'll work.
And you see that? You see him coming to that conclusion?
You see, because Alan Rickman is so good, and he lets you see every little bit of that thought process of, oh God, okay, be smooth. Like, you know, trying to figure it out. You see every bit of it.
You're one of them, aren't you? You're one of them. Please don't hurt me. Don't kill me.
It's so good.
It's so good. But McClane gives him a gun. Gruber attempts to shoot McClane, but finds the weapon is unloaded and is saved only by the intervention of other terrorists. McClane escapes, but is injured by shattered glass and loses the detonators.
Such a good call. He saw the first thing he did when he looked down. That's the first thing. The first thing he noticed when he's down on the ground was his bare feet.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the slow pan up to him looking at John McClane and then the processing everything.
And so, he was already planning, like, you know, like how he could, you know, essentially, like, sort of deprecate him. Right. You know?
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so he immediately goes, like, there's this gunfight that's not getting anybody anywhere because they're just blind fire shooting because they don't know what they're doing. He's like, shoot the glass. And it ended up completely screwing up John McClane because people are smart and they think of smart things, and I love when they do that in action movies.
Well, outside, it has escalated. The FBI is now here, and they have taken control. They order all the power to be shut off, which, as Gruber had anticipated, disables the final vault lock so his team can collect the bonds. Which Powell is out there literally talking to McClane, like, they're literally just going through the terrorist handbook. Like, they may as well just be, like, they're giving them all the control at this point, and they think they're doing the smart thing.
I also love how the FBI comes on the scene, like, perfectly calm, cool, and collected. And, like, you think for a second, like, okay, this is going to be handled with some grace and poise, because the LAPD is screwing it all up.
Uh-huh.
And then cut to the chopper scene, where the white guy is like, yeah, I'm going to kill these terrorists.
Okay, let's also, I can't go past the fact that it was Johnson & Johnson when they showed up.
Mm-hmm.
Johnson & Johnson, no relation. I just keep walking.
And he picks up and he's just like, this is Special Agent Johnson.
No, the other one. That was so good. I love that. Such a good bit. But yeah, so the FBI agrees to Gruber's demand for a helicopter, intending to send gunship helicopters to eliminate the group. McClane realizes Gruber plans to blow the roof to kill the hostages and fake his team's deaths. Carl, enraged by the death of his brother, Tony, who they could have won if Carl just hadn't been led by passion. Mm-hmm. Like the terrorists would have won because they would have trapped McClane in the elevator shaft and he would have been stuck.
Correct.
But instead, Carl was like, nah, I gotta kill him. And so, like, Carl is the whole reason that Hans didn't succeed.
Correct. And also pointing the gun on his face because he snuck up on him. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, I want a monologue before. And he's just like, and he just smacks it out of the way. And he's like, no, we're gonna fist fight, guy.
No, it's the Frozone monologue from The Incredibles. He starts monologuing. The guy's got me on a platter and he won't shut up. That's literally Carl. He's just like, nah, I gotta talk to you first.
That's not how inevitable my defeat is.
And the world will soon be his.
Yeah.
But yes, he attacks McClane and is apparently killed. He does look dead.
Mm-hmm.
But he is not. So Gruber sees a news report by Richard Thornburg on McClane's children and deduces that he is Holly's husband. Because this whole time, Holly is being a badass down there.
Absolutely. Yes,
like, I loved Holly. She was down there after Takagi's gone. She just walks up to Hans and is like, I'm kind of the ringleader now. We got a pregnant woman. Can you make her more comfortable? And also, we all kind of gotta go to the bathroom. And, like, she's just so centered and, like, not afraid of him. She's like, whatever.
And he's just like, yeah.
He honestly respects it. He's like,
I was just saying, there was a lot of respect in that transaction.
Yeah, you could tell that he was like, honestly, pretty ballsy, and I'm here for it. Yeah. Like,
and that's one of the very many reasons why, in my opinion, Hans Gruber and Alan Rickman's portrayal was one of the best villains. Obviously not the best villain in the movie, but, like, God, he's just one of the best action movie villains. Mm-hmm. He's so smart and so cool, and his entrance is really intimidating, but he's doing that whole, like, I'm being a polite gentleman, but at the same time, I will blast your head off.
Yeah.
And, like, it's so metered. It's, oh, God, just everything about Alan Rickman's Hans was so exciting, and he just steals the scene every time he's on camera, and it's just great.
So good. So crazy good. But he deduces that he is Holly's husband. The hostages are taken to the roof while Gruber keeps Holly with him. McClane drives the hostages from the roof just before Gruber detonates it and destroys the approaching FBI helicopters. Meanwhile, Thea retrieves a van from the parking garage, but is neutralized by your boy Argyle, who has been following events on his car radio. Because it's clicking back to Argyle, and he's just like, at one point, I think he's talking to a girl on the phone, and he's like listening to music and bopping around and having a great time. And it isn't until he like starts, I guess, seeing things on his little like TV in his limo that he's like, oh crap. And then he clicks on the CB radio, and sure enough, it's like all this police chatter.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that he just drives in, he runs into the other car, and then comes up, punches him, and then just stands there like so hyped.
I helped.
He's like hyping himself up, like, yeah, I did something.
Comes in and punches him with probably the weirdest hit sound effect I've ever heard. It was like, normally expect like a thud, but it was like a.
And it was a really bad punch, too.
It was.
Like, there was no power behind it, but he's like, oh, I'm dead. And just, like, Theo just passes out.
Oh, it was so good.
Which,
I loved him.
Also, the dynamic between Hans and Theo,
it was so much fun
to watch, because they're over here, they're doing this high-stretch situation, and Theo is just laughing and having fun and making sports references through the whole thing and just having a great time. And, like, you could tell that his energy is infectious because Hans is just like, oh, Theo, it's Christmas. It's the night for miracles. And they're just like, the whole world stops for them to have this, to have these series of moments. And I just, it adds a lot to the pacing of the movie and just, like, the congruency of everything. And it makes me very happy.
Well, a weary and battered McClane finds Holly with Gruber and his remaining henchmen.
Hans!
McClane surrenders to Gruber and is about to be shot, but grabs his concealed service pistol taped to his back and uses his last two bullets to wound Gruber and kill his accomplice.
In an iconic scene, I had seen that little bit before, just because it's so iconic.
It's amazing.
And so Gruber crashes through a window, but grabs onto Holly's wristwatch and makes a last-ditch attempt to kill the pair before McClane unclasps the watch and Gruber falls to his death.
I really hope that wasn't enough.
They're all just out there like,
ooh.
Okay. I guess let's go look at it, see who it is. Outside, Carl ambushes McClane and Holly, but is killed by Powell in just a very poignant moment.
Yes.
Very, very poignant.
Set that up perfectly.
They really did. Yeah. And they didn't overplay it. Like, right. They didn't make it, right. Like, let's do a 10-minute scene about this. It was just, this is a moment.
With flashbacks and everything.
We're going to see the moment mm-hmm. happen, and then we're going to move on. But Holly punches Thornburg when he attempts to interview McClane before Argyle crashes through the parking garage door in the limo and drives McClane and Holly away together. What was the last line of the movie? What was his quote that he said? Oh, it was so funny to me. It was something like,
John McClane, you're really a diehard.
No, it said, if this is how these guys celebrate Christmas, I don't even want to think about New Year's or something right. like that.
That's right.
And then that was the last thing of the movie. And that is Die Hard, guys.
Woo!
Now, because it's based on a book, you cannot just rename it after the book. But what would you rename this one?
Why do I always not plan this?
What's the name of the tower?
Nakatomi.
Nakatomi yeah. Cowboy.
Oh, yeah. I knew you were going to love that when he started talking about Roy Rogers. I was like, oh, man, this is going to be right up Sam's alley.
I have one that's a joke, which is hard to kill. I had a line that was probably my favorite line in the whole movie when Holly realizes that John is the one who's like causing all the problems, and she was just like, John, nobody can annoy and drive someone as crazy but John. so I'm gonna say there's no one like John.
Okay.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
John?
Decking the halls.
All right. You know, it's not good. It's really not. It's very cheesy, and it sounds like a rom-com, but I would just go with crashing the party.
Nice.
That's a good one. I like that one.
Nothing's worse than Point Break.
Yeah, you naming a movie after another movie?
John! I was really milking it. I was trying to sell that I could think of something. I'm like, you know what? I think I'm gonna go with Point Break, and I was gonna hit you with
you
that.
You know what? I'm gonna call this one Gremlins. Let me show my work.
Trolls 2.
This is Trolls 2.
Revengeance.
Look, I come up with the best. I get a pass.
I can't think of anything witty. I would just say probably Trouble at Nakatomi Tower, but I hate it. So I
think Sam won. I think Nakatomi Cowboy is the best.
That's a good one. That is a good one.
Well, I went on Amazon, and Sam and John, I hope you're ready, because our boy Obi-Wan had our review for this week, had our positive review. We've had this guy on for, like we've taken his review a couple of times, and he was, like, the top reviewer, so I had to pick him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so Obi-Wan, for the positive reviews, first off, the general consensus is really good, 85% rated at 5 stars on Amazon.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And Obi-Wan titled it, all caps, Yippee-ki-yay, and this is back in 2015. it says, there's an ancient Aramaic saying that's been handed down since the early first century. It's just not Christmas until someone gets dropped off the Nakatomi Tower. Die Hard just delivers. It's what a good action movie should be. Real people fighting plausible, however improbable, bad guys and situations. This was from the days when John McClane ran around barefoot with a machine gun, not surfing on the back of jets or taking down the entire Russian army. It's just a great action movie, and I had completely forgotten the Run DMC Christmas music on the soundtrack. It just makes the holiday spirit complete. 5 stars.
Everything.
So that's our boy. And then I've got a couple of negative ones. They're both pretty short, so... This first one is from Austin Gaines, and it's just titled Overrated. This was earlier this year. 1, this is not a Christmas movie. 2, this is not a good movie.
Austin,
I went in expecting a sweet and lighthearted Christmas movie and got an action-packed, high-intensity movie. If I was an adrenaline junkie, then I may think about going back and watching this in the right mindset. However, I am not and do not think I will do that. 2 stars.
When was anybody ever going to tell me that skydiving was intense? Like, they should have made me more aware that skydiving
the
is
movie
an intense
is titled
thing to do.
Die Hard.
Bro,
and
Austin,
if you look at
nothing.
The rating, it's R.
Yeah.
I feel like that's got to be a little bit of a joke.
I hope so.
Well, this other one is from Christmas someone movie. Who just calls Shut himself up. In all caps Opal, and it's titled, Why Did I Pay for This? I have read so much hype for this movie, and about a quarter of the way through, it was just not nearly what reviews led me to believe. If you like the hyper, blow-em-up movie trend, then this is for you. Bruce Willis was quite handsome, I will say. 2 stars. He was just so
that one whole star was for Bruce.
Wait, what is that from?
So my mother, when she was, it's a running joke in our family that she had a crush on Harrison Ford when she was like a teenager.
Oh, okay.
And so then in 2015, when the trailer for Force Awakens comes out, we watched, our whole family watched it. And, you know, he comes on at the end and he's like, Chewie, home. And my mom just goes, Harrison Ford is still so charismatic. And it's become a running joke.
That's awesome.
So she, like, swooned when she saw him again.
That's kind of adorable.
So what do you guys think? This one is rated critically on Rotten Tomatoes.
I think it's 86%.
Okay.
It's Samuel. I was going to say 86.5. You can say I was going to say 86.5, but I don't want to Price is Right him. But 86.5.
Price is Right him, dude. Just do it.
86.5.
Okay.
I'm going to throw out critically.
Yes.
That's an important distinction.
Yes. 82. Okay.
I'm going to take a swing at 89.
John, you're the closest. Ooh, and I'm going to start 90s? Writing these down now. It is actually 94%.
Nice. Oh. Yeah. I thought it would be a little better audience than critically. So.
Yeah,
same. Yeah,
Well, now you get to guess that. What's the audience?
What was the critical?
94.
Now, based off that high number, I think it'll be the inverse effect.
I'm going to say 92%.
Okay.
89.
Okay.
I'm going to say 91.
Okay.
Flat even 90.
Sam, you're the closest. The audience score and the critical score are the same. 94 for both.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Really, that one
imagine
really surprised
people being
me.
Correct.
And now IMDb score out of 10.
8.1.
8.5. I'm going to say 8.8.
9.1.
It's Sam again. It's an 8.2.
He just cheats his ass off.
I know. He's on his phone the whole time, I'm telling you. He's looking up the score.
It's sus. It's sus, dude.
Well, the budget for this one, he's playing a fruit game. the budget for this movie was $28 million, and it made $366.1
million. That's a smashing success,
yes,
I'd say.
Smashing success.
Absolutely smashing.
Smashing.
And then I got a bunch of fun facts here. So the fictional Nakatomi Plaza is the headquarters of 20th Century Fox. The company charged itself rent for the use of the then unfinished building.
They charged themselves rent. So stupid.
That has to be some sort of tax thing.
yeah, sure.
I really hope
that
so.
That was the first fun fact on the IMDb trivia was that. So in an article for the 30th anniversary of Die Hard, Bonnie Bedelia, which was Holly, stated that the first thing she thinks of when someone mentions Die Hard is Alan Rickman. The two became friends and had lunch together every day while shooting the movie, and she Aww. Expressed how lovely and gentle Rickman was in real life.
Aww.
I just thought that was really sweet.
What a beautiful man.
The Everybody scene, I mean, oh, he's fantastic. Yes. The That's scene where shit. Bruce Willis and Alan Rickman meet up was unrehearsed to create a greater feeling of spontaneity between the two actors.
That's awesome.
So everything you see is just like the first reaction they had. The scene where McClane falls down a shaft was a mistake by the stuntman, who was supposed to grab the first vent as it originally was planned. He slipped and continued to fall, but the shot was used anyway. It was edited together with one where McClane grabs the next vent down as he falls. It does not tell me what happened to that stuntman in the fun fact, so I do not know if he is okay or what happened.
He was rigged up.
Yeah.
I should hope so.
They probably just keyed out the harness, but...
Yeah. But in the spring of 1987, producer Joel Silver and director John McTiernan attended a performance of the play Dangerous Liaisons, in which Alan Rickman played the evil, I don't know how to pronounce it, Vicomte de Valmont.
Is that the prequel to Lost in Liaisons?
Oh my god.
We have to do that for their podcast.
But that was where Silver and McTiernan realized that they had found their Hans Gruber, was when they came and saw him at that show. Huh. Much of the script was improvised due to the constant screenplay tweaks that were being made during filming. I have to know how much of Bruce Willis's just little joke lines were just him. Ironically, Bruce Willis sneered at for being an all-American hero by the head German terrorist is actually more German than most of the villains. Alan Rickman was obviously English, and Alexander Godunov was Russian. Bruce Willis was born in 1955 and in West Germany to an American father and a German mother.
What?
Yeah.
Huh.
Bruce Willis's exhaustion from his schedule, because he was also shooting Moonlighting at the same time, forced Stephen E. D'Souza to beef up the roles of the other characters, giving characters like Al Powell, Ellis Argyle, and Richard Thornburg more personality and screen time.
That's so. Such a... Oh, wow. That's yeah. cool that that led to...
Like, a really good choice.
What really, mm-hmm. really gave a lot of power to the pacing.
Yeah.
Because I think if it was just... If there was any more John McClane, I feel like it would feel... It feel too much.
Yeah. Whereas it spread it out just...
I mean, I feel yeah. like it'd start to feel like a Rambo or...
right.
It would start mm-hmm. to right. fall into the stereotype. But what makes this different than most action-oriented films...
is that the characters are really compelling.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like, Al was thought out, you know, everything... Yeah, that was a good choice. Led to a great choice.
And the only other one I have is that in the original script, as in the original novel, the action took place over 3 days... But John McTiernan was inspired to have it take place over a single night by Shakespeare's Midsummer Night's Dream. He just wanted it all to be in one night.
Oh!
Yeah. So now we get to recast from this one.
Ooh.
I want to see Samuel as Carl.
I was thinking Carl, too, for Samuel. I see That'd be Carl. Very interesting.
Really? That's interesting, because I was going to say...
I was going to say Samuel as Hans.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I was gonna say Samuel as John, if I'm being entirely honest.
I think you could play that.
I could see that too. I could see you as the John McClane.
I was gonna say Tyler as Hans.
I agree with that. I
adore that.
I think Tyler would be Hans. We could put you as John McClane. I'm happy with that.
I was gonna
John's
say
John's Powell.
No, then you're Argyle.
I was gonna say you as Powell.
Me as Powell?
Yeah, man.
Danielle is definitely Argyle.
Just in the limo.
I'm just there not paying any attention.
Okay.
So I think that John is Powell, and I think that Russell is the LA PD chief.
The head guy.
Oh,
yeah.
their interactions would be hilarious.
Yeah.
Our dynamic is already like that, so
pretty much. We said to throw on cop outfits.
I think you
the
could
great
play
Russell
Holly
and John
well.
Feud.
I would like to play Holly.
I feel like that would be a role that you'd be cool with.
Yeah, I like Holly. She's awesome.
Yeah, I think you'd do a good job there.
We'll just cast Tyler as everyone else.
No, I think Russell would be a good Ellis, though.
I kind of was thinking Ellis for Russell a little bit.
Dude, you would chew the scenery so hard in the best way possible.
So schmoozy and awful.
Just like Hans, Bubby.
Brett would make a great Carl.
Brett would make a
good... He would do a good Carl.
Brett would be really scary as Carl.
He would be a really scary Carl.
And then he gets the... And then he'll punch you in the face and freak you out instead of me, Samuel. Good.
Well, let's go to favorite and least favorite moments from this one. Whoever wants to start. Mm.
What is this?
Are you just looking at memes?
Oh, stop it. It's a lusty liaison's nonsense.
I'm trying to figure out what it actually is.
Oh.
And I think it is.
That was one thing I thought about taking down really? Statistics for was how many times Samuel was disruptive with his phone during podcasts. Because it happened
early on,
times.
It happened multiple times. Bah, 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 bah.
Or it would just be like ding, ding, or blah, 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 like, and I would just be like,
or
Samuel,
just the tie
turn your phone on silent, and he would be like, no, no. And then there was the point where I was talking about in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, I was delivering a fun fact, or it was a review about like something, General Palpatine, Dark Lord of the Sith, and his went off right then and had already gone off earlier in the podcast.
Terrific.
And I was like, you have not yet turned it on silent. So it happened several times. I thought about writing this
down. Good timing,
too.
Though.
It was good timing, but I'm glad you keep it on silent now. So anyway, favorite and least favorite moments from this one.
Oh my god, that is so hard. I know what my least favorite moment is, but I'm working on the favorite.
I'm trying to think of what my least favorite would be.
I have both ready if you guys want
to
go for it.
Please do.
Some time.
My favorite movie
My favorite movie.
My favorite moment of this movie had to have been when Hans Gruber and John McClane meet in person for the first time.
Yeah.
And he just has that moment of just like, okay, I know names. Here we go. And then John McClane's just like, uh-huh, yeah, yeah. Oh, what's your name? Clay. Okay. Dirk. Good. Here's a gun. That was just that
movie. Clay Bill.
Is that, that moment Bill was Clay. just like so funny.
Yeah, because he said Clay. Bill Clay. Because
it was William Clay. Yeah.
That moment was just so funny. I just enjoyed the heck out of it. And, like, I know I went into this a review not really, like, wanting to say too much because I actually didn't super love the movie. But that's mostly just because I tire so quickly of awful, cheesy 80s action. Gunfire is shooting here, bah, 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 and we're just rolling around. Now here's 20 minutes of John McClane crawling on the floor underneath some desks. Who knows? And it's just like, that's sort of like, you should always, you know, shoot first and ask questions later. And it's like, isn't that what you're doing?
I'm going to have you watch Lethal Weapon at some point because I'm very curious. Because Lethal Weapon is a ton of, like, super serious drama. And then the last 30 minutes of it are, they, like, pack all of the insane action into, like, the last half hour of the movie. And it's just so over the top. And I'm very curious to see what your reaction to that would be.
I will say, every other scene felt like Bruce Willis running hunched down shooting a machine gun into the next room.
I just tired of it so quickly. Like,
so I get
like,
where he's coming from.
And then that fight scene between him and was the brother's name? The one who shows up at the very end?
Tony? Carl?
Carl.
Because
Tony's the one who died.
That fight scene between him and Carl went on for like 15 minutes. And like John McClane punched that man 30 times in the face. And then Carl punches McClane once and he falls down like, oh, I'm almost done for. And I'm like, wait, hang on, wait. Clearly Carl is the smaller man here.
I like that fight scene.
Cringe.
I think honestly, Russell.
Know your place, trash.
So Russell, I think I'm going to be similar in what I liked and disliked. I will say I didn't have as much of an issue with this action. Honestly, I prefer this action to like the Tombstone, pow, 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 pow. We're just shooting guns, like, and that's it. Because at least in this, they're, like, rolling around, they're sliding under things. Like, to me, I can hook on to this kind of action better than just, like, we're all gonna stand and shoot at each other kind of thing. This didn't bother me as much. I will say, I did get a little bogged down in the weeds of, let's just watch, kind of like you said, McClane just crawling through a bunch of things. And there was a lot of footage of just him, like, crawling under things or going around things, and like sometimes the scenes didn't really achieve anything. It was just watching him sneak around, and so those I guess would be my least favorite, just because I felt like a little bogged down in it and I was like, am I missing important things? No. Okay, moving on, you know. My favorite, I loved the him and Hans meeting up scene, was absolutely incredible. I loved all of Holly being a badass. And then every scene with Argyle. Every moment of Argyle being on screen, I loved him so much. So that would be my favorite and least favorite.
Okay.
So my least favorite bit was the FBI agents and the Johnson & Johnson bit. It just didn't really get me. It felt unnecessary. It just felt like another thing thrown in just for really no reason. I feel like they could have had that been the LAPD and the chief making all those decisions, and you know, you could even run it as, like, he literally finds a, like somebody hands him, all right, this is, like, the terrorist handbook. Like, this is how you're supposed to handle the situation, and he's just following the steps out of there, and I think you could have achieved the same effect without having this weird, like, everybody's waiting for the FBI to show up because they're gonna take control, and then they show up, and they're just bad, and it's like, well, but you could have just done that with the original.
Can I make a very quick case for that, though?
Yeah.
So I really liked that specifically because the through line with the people on the ground was the fact that Al Powell is the only one who appreciates that John McClane is an actual person. And
that appreciates that he has ability.
Exactly. He has ability and he's an actual human being. Whereas the chief of police for the LAPD doesn't acknowledge the severity of the situation until it's too late, and the FBI guys come in and don't acknowledge that these are actual people. Mm-hmm. Like, one of the FBI guys who was in the chopper even said, you know what, honestly, if we go in there and we keep it tight, we get 25% of the hostages killed, and I'm okay with that. Yeah. Like, it's supposed to show contrast between John McClane, who is genuinely mourning and reacting to every single death that takes place, versus these suits who don't understand what it's like to actually be in there, and their poor decision making almost enables the bad guys to get away scot-free. If it weren't for John McClane, they would have done a clean sweep and gotten out of there perfectly because their plan was really good.
It's similar to like when people have so much money that they're out of touch with reality.
Exactly.
Where they, you know, will, like they're so out of touch and so they're just like, oh yeah, that amount of money is nothing. And like, whereas everyone on the ground is like, no. And
that
that's
means kinda, a lot
that's
to
the
us.
Comparison between like Powell and the FBI agents.
Right. So that... I don't know. It didn't really land with me.
Sure.
So that was my least favorite. And then my favorite moment was the first time that they talked on the phone. Or on the radio, the first time that Hans and McClane talked on the radio.
Yeah, that was really
and
good.
And Hans is like,
yeah. That was really good.
Who are you? McClane's like, I'm just here. Roy. And he's like, you're just an idiot American? And he's like, yeah, basically.
he's like, that's quite a good job you're doing for a security guard. He's like, try again.
So, my least favorite moment, and it's just because of the directorial choice and just the staging of it was not really well done, was Argyle punching Theo out of submission. Because, first off, he has to hop into the car. I can tell you, from how high that window was to where he was on the ground, that had no power. I can barely, getting up into the vehicle takes all your strength.
Yeah.
To hop up and swing at somebody, no, it didn't work out that way. But and the cheesy sound effect, I was like, what is this? But I will say probably my favorite moment had to be what was it? Oh, it just left me. Ooh, digging the brain.
Digging the brain.
Oh, I know what it was. It was another Argyle moment.
I want your thoughts.
It was the Argyle moment where John is like looking over, it's like, Argyle, I hope you're calling the police after those gunshots. Pan over. Argyle's in the back, chilling, talking to the stuffed bear. Like, what are you doing? And there's like, you can visibly see the gunshots and hear the sound effects in the background, but no, he's just jamming to Run DMC, mm-hmm. just talking to the bear.
Yeah. I would say my least favorite moment, and this is just something that's congruent with all 80s action films, I don't like it, and this is because we're spoiled in modern day with movies like John Wick, where the 80s action star takes the submachine gun and hip fires it explicitly, and like small things like, you know, hey, I've got this 30 round magazine in the gun, and I'm shooting like at least 600 to 700 bullets before I have to reload. Small things like that bother me.
Trust me,
a
I remember
lot.
How you felt about Robin Hood.
I
remember.
I don't like it. So every scene where he's trying to take that action hero pose with the gun on his side, it kind of kills it for me because I wish it's just like aim down the sight so you can shoot and hit what you're aiming at. And the only person who actually did that was Carl, because he's, as he says, professional. So that's a thing. But I mean, that's just a smaller gripe. My favorite moment, though, actually was when the villains succeeded in robbing the bank. Because they had a really, really airtight plan.
Yeah.
They expected everything. They planned for everything. Everything happened without a hitch, save for John McClane. And even through all of that, they still accomplished what they were going for. And if it weren't for him, they would have succeeded, which shows I like that because the plan had a lot of thought to it, save for John McClane, which was really, really cool. So having that, just seeing their eyes light up and the religious music going through when
the
they're...
The joy to the world.
Yeah. When they're going through and just grabbing all the bonds and stuff, like, it was great.
I mean, arguably their plan went better than expected because the FBI showed up and they didn't have to waste a C4 in blowing up the
Yeah, they just shut
the
off
vault.
The power for
They
them.
Shut off
they
the power,
like,
so
cool.
It went better than expected.
Well, that was the thing, is that, and I only know this from my extensive viewing of this movie, the C4 was never for the vault. They weren't going to blow the vault.
Yeah.
The C4 was for the top floor so that they could blow up the roof with all of the survivors on it and fake their own deaths so that while they're clearing the rubble, they had escaped through that other minivan.
And they wanted, because they referred to the fact that they wanted a bigger explosion than they got because right. it didn't take down enough of the tower. They wanted right. to, like, actually kind of take down the top of the tower.
Exactly.
Which they weren't able to do because he had already used that
C4. And hell, if I'm not an architect expert, but I don't know how big of a blast, like, at the top of the building, like, maybe it could have collapsed the entire building. I don't know. But, like, whatever their plan was, it was really good, save for John McClane killing everybody, which just kind of puts that importance on the one man versus everybody kind of trope, which can be done really improperly, in my opinion, but this one was just done really well.
Yeah.
Because people are smart, and I like when people are smart in movies, because you're not going to accomplish things unless you think about them first.
Well, out of 10 machine guns, what would you rate Die Hard?
I'm going to rate it 8. I enjoyed it. It's not, you know, not the best movie of all time for me or anything like that, but it's a fun time. It's enjoyable. I know I've referred to it several times, but I'm going to have y'all watch Lethal Weapon and compare it. I think I like Lethal Weapon a little more, but very similar movies. I'm gonna give it an 8.
Okay.
9.5. It's probably one of my top 20 favorite movies.
All right.
I'm going to throw out a 7.5. I get so tired of that tedious 80s action. And like Tyler mentioned, like the not like aiming down sights things, just like not logical. Like I guess I am spoiled, but when I say that I tire of tedious 80s action, that is included in what I'm talking about. All the ammunition stuff drives me nuts.
I think I'll sit with where Samuel's at. It's I'd say 8 machine guns because it is better in a lot of ways compared to a lot of other 80s action film. We get depth to our side characters. They're not just there to glorify and show the skill gap difference mm-hmm. between our hero and other people. Plus, I think it's great for its comedic factor. I don't think a lot of action movies fail to include the dynamics of acting into the... 'cause what makes a situation more tense is the contrast between the lesser serious scenes versus the more intense high action sequences. Plus, I mean, I'd watch it again. You could say the rewatchability's on point. So I can't dock points for that.
That rewatchability.
Because they want me to do it every time. I'm a slave. Help.
Well, I will stick with John and Sam. I think I would put an 8, 8 machine guns for me. This one I had fun with, and that's really all I ask for from action movies. I'm not looking, when I watch action movies, I'm not looking for something super crazy serious. I'm looking for something like either fun to look at or kind of goofy or both. Like that, like that's really what I'm looking at. And this gave me, you know, like enough of both of those things to where I was able to enjoy it. It wasn't just, like, you know, goofy crap. It wasn't just, like, spectacle. It was, like, a little bit of both. And it had some absolutely stellar performances by specifically Bruce Willis and Alan Rickman. Just absolutely killing it. Yeah, I think I feel very comfortable at an 8. And I would probably add this to my list of, you know, watch at Christmas time movies, along with my favorite Christmas movie of all time, Gremlins. So... yeah, I would absolutely add it to that. So, unless anyone has any final thoughts, I think that's, all we have for today.
Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays,
Merry
folks.
Christmas,
well, Jeff, we're not playing out just yet. Hold on. Oh. Y'all are acting like we're like about to play the music.
Bum bum.
As always, make sure to follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Mad Artists Entertainment and on Twitter at artists_mad. We do still have, do you want to say anything about Force Comedy?
Yeah, it's coming back to our 3 viewers. I've got great I've got fantastic news for you. Force Comedy will return after the holiday season is over and we get our heads screwed on straight and life starts making more sense. It's an amazing project that I really, really am passionate about and love a lot. And once schedules start to make more sense because the holidays aren't completely just jackknifing everything, I've got a whole roadmap design for what we're going to do, what we're going to play, the experiences we're going to have, and you're going to want to be there. So Mad Artists Co. is our Twitch handle. So be sure to drop a follow so that you can stay up to date as soon as we go live. And we'll also be very vocal about it on Instagram and all of the social medias. So be on the lookout because we're coming back.
That's right, man.
Oh my God.
We're going to have a lot more projects coming up this spring as well, but we're going to wait to say anything about that until later on.
Yeah.
You can be watching Get on our hype. Social media and on our website, madartistsco.com, for updates on all of that. If you have any comments, corrections, questions, or requests that we should review in the future, you can message our social media or you can email us at banterbox.madartists@gmail.com. Leave a review wherever you're listening. That really helps us out. And we will see you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.